I'm Andrew Schwartz, and you're listening to The Truth of the Matter, a podcast by CSIS where we break down the top policy issues of the day and talk with the people that can help us best understand what's really going on.
I want to welcome to The Truth of the Matter two very special gentlemen, Admiral James Stavridis, who, of course, is a retired admiral in the United States Navy, spent more than 30 years in the Navy, rising to the rank of four-star admiral. He was Supreme Allied Commander at NATO and previously commanded SOUTHCOM over military operations throughout Latin America. Elliot Ackerman is the author of a number of novels. His books have been nominated for a variety of awards, including the National Book Award, the Andrew Carnegie Medal in Fiction and Nonfiction. He's a contributing writer at The Atlantic and a Marine veteran, having served five tours of duty in Iraq and Afghanistan, where he received the Silver Star, Bronze Star for Valor, and Purple Heart. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast, and thank you both for your service. You are here as authors of the forthcoming novel, 2054, which is on sale on March 12th. I urge everybody to go to Amazon right now and get this. This is the sequel to 2034, which was a New York Times bestseller, among other accolades. I want to go to you first, Admiral Stavridis. Can you tell me a little bit about this new book? And I know it's a work of speculative fiction, but can you dive deeper into how it could be grounded in our modern American reality?
I can. So 2034 is about a war between the U.S. and China in the year 2034. The sequel, 2054, takes us to that year, mid-century. And instead of the geopolitical explosion between the U.S. and China, what we find is a United States that is immersed itself in growing civil conflict. We see, above all, the emergence of new technology known as the singularity. This is the idea of biology, engineering, materials, cyber, all of it kind of merging together under the aegis of artificial intelligence. And a third and finally, we see some of the surviving characters or their progeny from 2034 come back, all of it with the geopolitical overlay. So it's a pretty rich mix. But if people ask me to summarize it in a sentence, I'd say it's a book about artificial intelligence, geopolitics, and civil conflict in America.
And we're talking about these issues a lot here in 2024. Elliot, can you lay out sort of the plot of the book and how you decided you guys would go about creating the sequel?
You know, the plot of the book opens and in the United States, after this calamitous war with China, what we see is that politics has fundamentally changed, and the Democratic and Republican parties have actually become two rump parties, which follows trends we already see in American life today, whereas the plurality of Americans identify as independents. And we have in 2054 a very charismatic independent president who has formed a new party around himself, President Miguel Castro, who jokes that if the United States could elect a president with a middle name Hussein, they can certainly elect a president with a last name Castro. And Castro's new party is the American Dream Party. He's been very successful. He stabilized the country, but now he is deciding to run for office outside the norm of his usual terms. And many people view this as a holding on to power that will be calamitous for the nation. And so in the opening chapters of the book, he is assassinated. However, as he drops dead, there are lots of questions as to who or what is responsible for this assassination. And that is where we start to see the intersection of politics and of technology and some of these themes that Jim already outlined in terms of artificial intelligence and the singularity, which as we define in the book is really the merger of biological and technological evolution. And this idea in the book of remote gene editing and gene editing and how that plays into the politics in the story. So the book is a techno thriller, but also a political thriller. I would say it's equal parts Tom Clancy and Shakespeare's Julius Caesar.
That's interesting. Admiral Stavridis, you know, both you and Elliot have talked about bio involved with this. I think a lot of us are thinking about AI, but we're not necessarily quite thinking about its relationship to gene editing and bio if we're not in the medical field. Why did you guys get into that in this book?
We had both read previous work by Ray Kurzweil, who's a futurist, a marvelous thinker. And he actually appears, by the way, as a character in the book. He's living today. And he wrote a book called The Singularity Is Near, meaning that very soon we were going to see this merge of our physical, biological entities, most specifically our brains and our thoughts that are generated by electrical impulse, with the actual hardware in the real world, if you will, meaning that the ultimate end of this is that you could upload a person's memory, consciousness, personality traits, ability to communicate onto a chip, and in that sense, live forever. That's the far end of the spectrum. We don't get there in 2054. But the interim steps along that journey, you're seeing the beginning of now in 2024 with Elon Musk thinking about brain implants that perhaps could allow you to understand immediately another language. So there's a spectrum of event here. And of course, whatever nation attains the singularity first will have an enormous advantage over fellow great powers. So all of that is brought into the book.
How would a nation use such a technology to its advantage?
I'll give you three obvious ways. One is that a nation that was extremely advanced in artificial intelligence would have instantaneous access to all the world's knowledge and all the decisions that had ever been made, which would then go through this artificial intelligence and be available to allow a particular nation to make decisions on the battlefield, in the world of economics, in the world of diplomacy, that took into account all of these other ideas and information pools. A second obvious use would be in advancing other technologies. And artificial intelligence would be vastly capable of advancing fusion, nuclear power, of understanding the most efficient means of battery power storage, of creating effective programs to undertake space travel, just harnessing that raw power. And then thirdly, in the military sphere, artificial intelligence singularity could lead to the rise of humans with superhuman computing and intelligence that could be applied on the battlefield. I can think of a lot more, but there's three to whet your appetite.
So you're talking about like real super soldiers.
Sure.
Not just Marvel, not just like this is something we're on the cusp of.
In 2054, I think we'll be on the cusp of it. 30 years is a long time in this world. But I think that Eliot said Julius Caesar meets Tom Clancy. I'll throw in Starship Troopers meets Isaac Asimov's The Foundation Trilogy.
Well, it seems like this book's got it all. And it does have a lot of parallels to some of the issues, like you said, Elon Musk, etc., that we're thinking about today. Is that why you guys decided to write this book now? Because you're thinking about these issues and you're thinking about how it's going to shape our future?
You know, I mean, this book is part of a trilogy, the first one being 2034, and the last one will be 2084, which will be out in a couple of years. And each one of those books really takes on what we've identified as really, you know, the three great challenges that are facing not only our nations, but probably our species in this century. And the first is, you know, peer level war. So in 2034, that is a story that is about war between the United States and China, and has a heavy technological focus on cyber. The second is civil conflict inside the United States. You know, really the greatest national security threat facing the United States right now is not an international threat. It's our own domestic dysfunction. And, you know, this 2054 is a story about our domestic dysfunction and how we try to untangle our way out of it. But it's also a story about a new and rising technological challenge, which is the artificial intelligence and the integration of biology and technology. This idea that, you know, molecules are becoming the new microchips, that we are understanding the ethical stakes of injecting our bodies with technology. And in that respect, this isn't anything new. I mean, we look at COVID. Those COVID vaccines were technology. And most Americans injected that technology into their own body. You know, there's a moment in the book where one of the characters is ruminating on the ethics of all of this. And he asks the question, you know, are robots going to inherit the earth? And his answer is yes, they will be our children, because this barrier between technology and biology is becoming increasingly fuzzy. And the last book in the series will be about the environment, and it will also take some of these ideas about artificial intelligence forward. So, you know, that sort of situates 2054 kind of in this broader project that Jim and I have been working on.
In 2054, before President Castro is assassinated, he's established control of the media. What does that mean in 2054? And why did you write about a president establishing control of the media? How did that come about?
Well, all fiction is a flow from the present, right? And I think that as you see in today's world, you see leaders around the world, let's not make this specific to the United States, but leaders around the world increasingly gaining control of media. And I think that artificial intelligence is very powerful in that regard. Another example of how it becomes very lethal is that artificial intelligence allows exact replicas of an individual's voice and appearance, cadence, all of that. You're seeing that now in 2024. Think how sophisticated this will be by 2054 and how advanced artificial intelligence is capable of directing slice after slice of that into authoritarian nations. So yes, it's something we were very concerned about, and you see the beginning of those trends now, and they'll only accelerate as we draw on toward mid-century.
It's an interesting thing that you bring up is, you know, AI and images and sound. And in our present day, recently, OpenAI has been, I guess, battle testing a new program called Sora, which is you type in a few lines and high quality video spits right back out at you. One of the things that people have said about the Sora technology is, oh, well, we'll be able to tell the difference between what's real and what's not real by use of advanced watermarking. That doesn't seem like it's something that could really prevent us from a disaster. Does it to you?
Listen, if you look at it fundamentally, this is about consciousness. This is a book that's a story about the individual, but it's also about our collective consciousness. And when we talk about sort of the body politic, I think you'll see in 2054, you know, much of the plot of the book hinges around remote gene editing, who killed Castro. But the themes it's really touching on is the body politic, our collective consciousness, and how if the body politic is sick, how do we bring it back to health? And so when we talk about things like AI and we talk about media in the politics, what we're really talking about is our collective consciousness. And when our collective consciousness becomes dysfunctional or even extremely schizophrenic as the left and the right part of America's brains are at war with one another, and that's when we get to a point where our political problems become intractable. And so the question becomes is how do we walk that back? And how do these technologies either serve us or undo us? And those are themes in the book 2054.
You know, before our late trustee, Dr. Henry Kissinger, died, we had the opportunity to meet with him on several occasions to talk about AI. In fact, he told us that him and Eric Schmidt were at work on another book about AI. And I asked him, what keeps you up at night, Dr. K? And he said, well, AI keeps me up at night. And specifically, that traditionally countries battled over territory in the future, he thought that they would be battling over data. What do you all think about that?
I would say that's one of the themes in the book. I mean, you see that there is a race for the singularity, and the race for the singularity is as such because whoever gets to that point first is going to be able to start learning and start innovating at such an exponential rate that even having a jump of a week or 2 weeks when you factor in quantum computing is going to make that lead insurpassable. You know, and we're seeing this in some ways. You know, we're seeing it with like AI companies in the US right now, like NVIDIA is a great example. You know, I also work as a journalist and I was down at NVIDIA a couple of years ago. And, you know, if you look at the entire driverless cars market, you know, everything from Waymo to Apple to Uber, when they had their driverless cars, you know, programs, they're all competing against each other rapidly. But what was so amazing was every single one of them were using NVIDIA's chips. And NVIDIA's chips all operate off of a single programming language called CUDA. So if you wanted to make a different chip right now, you would have to reinvent that programming language and start from scratch. And it's basically impossible because NVIDIA has got this years-long head start. So when you extrapolate that into artificial intelligence, you know, whoever's going to arrive at these technologies first, even if it's only by months, will have, with the speed of those technologies innovate, will be able to build such an insurmountable lead that it creates an arms race that is in many ways even higher stakes than the arms races that we saw play out in the 20th century. And that kind of becomes part of the book, that you see the way this becomes international is everyone competing to achieve the singularity first, because whoever gets there first wins.
I hope you bought some stock from NVIDIA while you were down there.
It is one of the great regrets of my life. We can talk offline about it. There were conversations had, but it blew my mind what they were doing. And this was 3 years ago.
I think you could still buy it now and be okay.
You might.
The way, although you're starting to see articles in the Wall Street Journal about bubbles and things like that.
Yeah. So I mean, but again, but it's amazing. It's, you know, it's time matters. Time and space matters with these technologies.
Do you believe that our political polarization, like in reality, in 2024 in the United States, our political polarization, this is why you're writing this book, because our polarization continues to get worse and worse, and it allows like things like you're talking about in 2054 to actually happen?
Yes, that's part of it. But as Eliot said a moment ago, this really is a trilogy of cautionary fiction. Great power competition first, artificial intelligence, civil conflict second, and environment third. So I wouldn't overweight civil conflict as the greatest of all these dangers. Although I think you can make a case that we could solve the other ones much more easily if we were unified as a people. So in that sense, yes, it's critical, but it's only one of the trilogy of cautions that we espouse in the three book.
Admiral, do you think these new types of technologies are the greatest security threat that faces our world today?
I think there are three things that we ought to be very concerned about. One, we've just been through a pandemic and we act like, oh, okay, that was it. We checked our pandemic box. You know, history is rife with pandemics, and the next one may be able to jump the air gap between people breathing on each other. That would be multiples of lethality, for example. So I think the biological world is very concerning. Number two is what we've been talking about, cyber, and I'll sort of add that artificial intelligence, and as Eliot said, quantum compute. I think that's a second major challenge. And I think a third major challenge is geopolitics, broadly speaking, the competition between great powers. So there's plenty to keep all of us up at night. Those are three things that are on my mind.
I want to ask this to both of you, but Eliot, let's go to you first. How did your background in the military and your military expertise contribute to writing a novel like 2034 and now 2054?
You know, I think one thing is you come to understand politics pretty well, and you kind of understand how societies can quickly unravel. And having spent time in, you know, as a military member in places like Iraq and Afghanistan, or as a journalist in places like Syria or now in Ukraine, it makes these types of political crises feel very tactile, at least to me. So, you know, when you're imagining what it looks like when people take their political grievances out into the streets, extremely dangerous ways for society, it doesn't seem like the imagining is too far afield. And I think, you know, then on a personal level, I mean, I make my way as a novelist, like it, those experiences fundamentally inform kind of my understanding of human nature. And I think that particularly, you know, service and wartime service, what it kind of does is it sort of throws open the aperture of what you're capable of imagining human beings doing. You know, on the one side, sort of the best of us as humans, you know, the valor that we can show, the love for one another that we can show. And I've seen plenty of that in war, you know, but also the worst of us, some of the depravity that we can engage in. So on a personal level for me as a novelist, those experiences really, I think, threw open my aperture of what I can consider when writing characters.
Admiral Sharia, same question to you.
I love Eliot's answer. The only thing I'll add to it is in 40 years of banging around the U.S. Navy, I saw an enormous part of the world. I've traveled everywhere and seen, to pick up Eliot's best and worst, I've seen countries that really work beautifully. I've seen countries that ought to work well, but don't. Think Venezuela, Argentina, due to bad leadership. And I've seen countries that have fallen into truly awful circumstances in absolutely the worst of ways. So I think I'm able to bring that 40 years of global engagement to all three of the novels in this trilogy, alongside the excellent comments Eliot offered.
I want to ask both of you, and first to you, Admiral, what do you hope readers will take away from this book?
I hope they see it as correctly as cautionary fiction, and that on the civil conflict side, I hope it will encourage people to spend more time listening to each other, being respectful of each other, to avoid the kind of circumstances that we interrogate in the book. And secondly, on artificial intelligence, I hope that it will add to the growing sense that is developing of both how dangerous this can be and how powerful it can be, perhaps in good ways. It could be like electricity. It could be like the printing press, or it could be something truly terrible that creates grave challenges for us. The novel gives you a little bit of both.
Eliot, your thoughts?
I hope when a person finishes this book, they have sort of two reactions. The first is when they shut the cover, I hope they smile and say, that was a lot of fun. I think it is a fun book. We've been talking about very heavy and weighty themes, but it's a fun book. It moves. The characters are colorful and vivid. And so I hope that's their reaction, say, that was a lot of fun. And then I hope weeks and months later, people think about the book, or when they see something happen in the news, they say, wow, that was sort of something that I read about in 2034. And it kind of resonates in that way as they metabolize, you know, world events and think about them, which has been, for when 2034 came out, has been a reaction of many of the readers of that book. And that was very gratifying to see. So I hope that they have that reaction to it.
The book 2054 is out next week. And if you want to read about a new type of civil war and all the technologies and interesting things we've been talking about here, go get yourself a copy right away. It's a hot read. You can breeze right through it. Congratulations to both of you on this second novel of the trilogy.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. And thanks to CSIS, a fine organization that I've interacted with many times. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, check out our larger suite of CSIS podcasts from Into Africa, The Asia Chessboard, China Power, AIDS 2020, The Trade Guys, Smart Women, Smart Power, and more. You can listen to them all on major streaming platforms like iTunes and Spotify. Visit csis.org/podcasts to see our full catalog.